explaining what are the quantities I will talk about. I will talk about the entanglement entropy, that is just the von Neumann entropy corresponding to some density matrix here, rho v. I will always think this density matrix as obtained from from tracing the vacuum state, the fundamental state of the system, out of some place, some region, B. So it's a function of B. And we can think that, that this quantity, what measures, is the entropy in the vacuum fluctuations. You have some virtual pairs that annihilate inside, some virtual pairs that are created and annihilated outside, but the tracing over the outside part just splits some pairs in the boundary, and this generates some entropy inside. I will also talk about these Renshi entropies that are other information measures for the density matrix rho v that are discussed in the literature, and these are important somehow in the calculations, because most of the calculations are done with the Euclidean method of replica trick, and you start by calculating this, and then you take the limit of n to tending to 1. That limit implies some analytic continuation for non-integer n, and you obtain the entropy. Okay. So this is entanglement entropy, and it has been used in many different contexts. It has a wide range of applications. It started the interest in this quantity in black hole physics, in the paper by Bombelli, Cole, Lee, and Sorkin. They proposed that the black hole entropy maybe is related, because in the black hole we don't see inside, so maybe it's just tracing the division zero of freedom inside and give you some entropy that can be interpreted as a Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. This conjecture is still open, because at least in field theory, there are divergences, so one has to know quantum gravity in order to check it. In this context, the entanglement entropy is also important when discussing entropy bounds and the entropy in a region of Hawking radiation. In condensed matter, there is a lot of interest recently in this entanglement entropy. It has been shown that can be used as an order parameter for quantum phase transitions, an order parameter to topological order, and people have been interested in the fact that the entanglement entropy in some situations, especially in the vacuum state, it grows like the area. So it's like an area law, and this amount of entropy that grows less than the volume maybe may give the clue on how to make efficient simulation of the systems using some ideas from quantum information theory. In the quantum field theory context, I can mention people have related the behavior of the entanglement entropy to confinement, and we also mentioned that there is a proof of the Samolosic of C theorem in two dimensions in terms of entanglement entropy. I will explain in more detail this C theorem, because I want to motivate the rest of the talk in part on this. Sorry? Well, I'm not an expert on that, but the people say that using ADS CFT theory, that if you have the entanglement for a region and you increase the size, at some point you get a phase transition if there is in the sense of in the large N theory. For it grows with N, the entropy different according you have a size bigger or smaller than some number, okay?
My understanding is that those ideas came out of ADS-CFT, but they motivated people on the lattice to do some experiments where they did see this kind of...
There are some papers on the lattice that they see this type of things, this type of transitions.
This kind of temperature?
Sorry?
This kind of temperature. Okay.
Yeah, because it's the same type of transition you get with the finite temperature. So in a conformal field theory in two dimensions, the entropy grows like the logarithm of the size over some cutoff. And here is the Virasoro central charge of the theory. So if you do this computation that is just multiplying R and deriving S over R, you get the, in the conformal point, you get the central charge of the ultraviolet point and the infrared point, for example. But you can prove that this quantity is always decreasing, even out of the fixed points. This is done using this property of the entanglement the entropy in general that is called the Strong's subadditivity. It's an inequality between the entropy of different sets. You have to apply this in a relativistic context where this is A, this is B, this is the intersection of these two sets. I can explain more why this is intersection and this is the union, okay? So you just apply this inequality and you get this relation in two dimensions. And what happened, well, there is no proof of the C theorem in more dimensions. One would like to have one. And one possibility is to generalize this proof. The problem is that in more dimensions, one expects, for example, here in four dimensions, one has an area growing term with over the cutoff square, some linear term, some logarithmic term, some finite term. And in order, if you play this trick with sets and doing the strong subadditivity, you always get, because of the structure of this inequality, you always get relations up to the second derivative of the entropy. For example, this one is C, derivative C, and C contains the entropy derivative. So this is a second order derivative inequality for S. And with only second order derivatives, you cannot kill all the non-universal terms in the entropy. So it's kind of difficult to understand how to generalize this, except one has more inequalities for the entropy, for example, nonlinear inequalities, polynomial inequalities. Yes, it's positive everywhere. It's just this same inequality, but applied to a single line. You get that. It's just it's increasing the entropy is increasing with the size of the cell. Okay. This is because in order to apply this thing, you have to somehow have all the sets A, B, A intersection B, A union B, these sets are thought as partition of the Hilbert space as a tensor product, okay? So you would need to have something, in this case, you have this. And you can draw a different Cauchy surface for here, like this. Okay. So, and the union of this part with this part, because of causality and unitarity of the evolution, is exactly the same as this. So the entropy in the union of these two is just this. The entropy in the union of these two is just this one. So you can use this diagonalizing Cauchy surface in order to get the intersection of the algebras of this and this. And this is this algebra here, for example. And the union, of course, is the whole algebra there, okay? It's not clear. What I'm supposing is that if you have
is there a blackboard that's not used so that you can do it higher up?
Okay.
Is this the third one?
If you have, for example, this is time, okay? This is time, and this is x, okay? So I draw some space-like surface here. And what I say is that the entropy of this should be the same as the entropy of this one. The entropy of this one is the same as this, okay? So I can choose any Cauchy surface because all the information here is the same as here. It doesn't escape, okay? Because of a unitarity of evolution. We are thinking in a quantum field theory, okay? So, and this type, well, the last application I mentioned is in the ADS-CFT, this type of ideas we have been discussing with Rob is you have the conformal theory in the boundary, and the bulk you have ADS space, and there is a conjecture by Ryu and Takayanagi that the entanglement entropy in the set and the boundary is equal to the area of the minimal surface in the bulk that connects the same boundary as B over 4G. This is related to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, and it's a nice conjecture, and one would like to know more about the entropies of quantum field theory in order to check it or to know more about this duality, okay? So as we see, we have that the entropy is related to many different aspects of the quantum field theory, and one would like to know to what extent the entropies define a quantum field theory. That's the question I will try to answer or to investigate here. And for example, one thing that is very trivial in quantum field theory is when you have a free theory. When are the entropies here of the quantum field theory are produced by a free theory? If you have the set of entropies, how do you tell the theory is free, for example? This type of question I would like to answer. Okay? So, as these are numerical functions and this is a quantum theory, it has operators, one knows one place where this the quantum theory can be obtained from numbers. That is, if you have some correlators in the theory, there are well-defined axiomatic schemes that gives you a theory from correlators. So one would like to understand whether these entropies are related to correlators. In order to motivate this, I have written here, for example, in 1+1 dimension for different segments. So we have only one explicit and exact solution of the entanglement entropy for any set in two dimensions, that is this massless fermion in two dimensions. This is the expression of the entropy. It's given by some sum and subtraction of logarithm between the different boundaries of the set, okay? And the Renshi entropies in this particular case are all proportional to the entropy, so they are related to each other. And an interesting thing is that if you compute this correlator I put here the fermion operators, free fermion, massless fermion operators, on the boundaries, you have this dagger for the A's and this non-dagger for the B's, and this I minus IQ is Q is just the chirality. You have +1 or -1 depending on the chirality. And if you compute this, you use the weak theorem, you evaluate, and you get exactly this. An exponential of -6, the entanglement entropy there. This is a constant that can be absorbed in the normalization of the fields. So this gives a clue on how this relation between correlators and entropy can be. Because the first thing you notice is that the entropy, when two sets are far apart, the entropy is just the sum of the entropy of the sets. While the correlators, if they are far apart, A and B, and these are operators localized in A and B, is going to go to the product of the two vacuum expectation values. So just to take into account this clustering, different clustering properties, you you need an exponential relation there. So the answer in general will be something like that. For any theory, that you have some exponential with a constant for the entropy, and here some products of operators on the boundary of the set. These are different operators from this one, but it can be understood that these are just the CPT conjugate of phi Tweedle is the CPT conjugate of phi to the minus x, because the CPT is a symmetry of any quantum field theory, and it maps a set to the reflected one, okay? So in principle, one would like to study this ansatz and to understand whether this can be possible, okay? In more dimensions, one expects the same type of thing, but the operators now, as I said, this entropy does not depend on the Cauchy surface, so it must be localized on the boundary of the sets, and for example, in 2 plus 1 is going to be like some kind of a Wilson loop, and in more dimensions, some operator localizing in the sphere or in the surface with higher dimension. Okay. So then, if we consider this ansatz, then we have a specific idea of when this quantity is given by a quantum field theory. This has to respect some axioms, that the clustering property, covariance. These two we have for free because this clustering comes from the clustering of the entropies. The covariance comes from the covariance of the entropy. The spectral condition is more difficult. I will maybe tell something at the end. And we have also the positivity of the correlators. The positivity relations are very important because they reflect in the correlators the scalar product structure of the Hilbert space. Okay. So at first, when I started this, I was telling, these inequalities, positivity is related to inequalities, so we can map this to a strong subadditivity. Okay. The answer is that it's partially true, but it's not true, and it's kind of naive that in general one needs many more inequalities.
Oh, sorry.
Is positivity the positivity is related to unitarity?
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it reflects in the correlator just the fact that your Hilbert space is a good Hilbert space with a positive definite scalar product. Okay? So the positive relations come just from this. You produce an operator and make the conjugate operator, evaluating the vacuum, this has to be positive, so it translates to some double integral of the correlator, greater than zero, for example, and you have many more for more correlator. But the problem with this type of Wiedemann type of positivity is that it always involves the point where, for example, if you put in alpha x some two delta functions in order to get some correlator at definite points, at some point, you will have xx here, two deltas. So it cannot be applied just to a definite configuration of sets. It is just, you have to integrate, you have to put this function. So it's more appropriate to have positivity relations in the Fourier transform, let's say. So I was looking to something different and to something more similar to this Euclidean reflection positivity. That is, in the Euclidean framework, you can translate all correlators to Euclidean doing an analytic continuation. And in the Euclidean framework, you obtain something called reflection positivity. That essentially, for example, for the two-point function, tells that the two-point function of x bar, where x bar is just the time-reflected point, is positive. Okay, and this does not involve coinciding points. But the entropies are defined in real time. Okay, so I was looking for something that was like reflection positivity, but it applies to the Euclidean time. And it seems to me that there is no, in the literature, it's not done. At the beginning, I thought it was, sorry, this was not done. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, because this is alpha conjugated, this is alpha. These two functions are the same one. So, and always appears A, delta A, and delta A here, so. then I was looking for something different, and we have I call that relation wedge reflection positivity. Okay, the one that I will explain now. It can be shown from the Widmann axioms. You can just prove this. I have done it in the archive, but I prefer this one way of proving it because it's generalizable to any quantum system, even ordinary quantum mechanics. The idea is given by this Tomita Takesaki theory, that is a theory from the 70s. I put the general thing, and here I put what it means in quantum field theory, in order to understand a bit this thing that is quite, at first is difficult to have an example in the mind. You have just an algebra and a state in the algebra, okay? And you invent this operator that, for any operator in the algebra, the action of this is give you the adjoint operator on the vacuum. Once you have this, you can make a polar decomposition of this operator as an anti-unitary operator and something that is Hermitian and positive definite, okay? Just like that. In quantum field theory, if you take the algebra A as the algebra of operators in the right wedge, this is time, this is x, and you just take the algebra operator that lives in this wedge, and the vacuum state, this J that appears there is just a CPT operator, okay, in two dimensions. In more dimensions, it is a combination of CPT plus a rotation, okay? But it is an operator that maps a point to the opposite point with respect to the wedge. It leaves all the transverse dimensions invariant. So it do this kind of job. And delta is just the exponential of the boost operator there. So With this kind of construction, one can show that given any operator in the algebra, one can invent a reflected operator that is a J, O, J. This is a reflected operator. And one can show, using just general properties of these quantities, J and delta, that O reflected is always positive there. It's a positive quantity. In general quantum mechanical system, I will show in the general quantum mechanical system how this looks like. So in here, it tells that if you have an operator here, you multiply by some operator there that is, because J maps something here to something in the other wedge, you multiply the two, and this is always positive. So how this applies to this case of entropies? You can take this operator that is a combination, linear combination of the operators whose expectation values give you the exponential of the entropy, and then use this wedge reflection positivity on this operator, and this is positive, this translates into this, and this means that this matrix of correlators is definite positive. positive definite. And in terms of the entropies, it's just that the determinant of this exponential thing with aj and ai bar, the reflected one, is always positive for any collection of sets. For any collection of sets, aj is here is a collection of sets in the wedge. So you take, for example, a1, a2, a3, and the reflected ones. And in this particular case, this inequality is a determinant of a 3 by 3 plus 3 matrix. Okay. Here I mentioned only that you may worry that this quantity is infinite, is divergent, and this how this makes sense. But one can translate these inequalities into inequalities of the mutual information, just applying the definition of the mutual information. And these quantities are thought to be well defined in any quantum field theory. Okay. So it does mean that there are some singularities here, but these singularities drop out from the inequality. It's like homogeneous in the inequality. In particular, the case of 2 by 2 matrices, if you take only two sets here, is mapped to this inequality here. Because in that case, you can, the determinant of a 2 by 2 matrix, you split in two, and you can apply the logarithm, and it's giving you this linear inequality for the Renshi entropies. This is very similar to strong superadditivity, and in fact, it coincides with strong superadditivity if A is included in B, or B is included in, B, in A. But in general, this inequality and the strong superadditivity are independent. Okay, there are some position of the sets where they are not mapped to each other.
You replace the correlation by this.
This one?
Yeah, from?
Yeah, it's still a conjecture. Yeah, I want to show that it's true for some particular case, that is the Renshi entropies of integer n and some specific lambda there. Okay. And the way I will show it is using the same thing in a finite system and showing that these are quite general inequalities. So in a general system, you start with a density matrix. This is the composition of the density matrix and eigenvalues and eigenvectors. You make a purification, that is, you take a bigger space, which is just the product of the initial space where this density matrix lives, times some other space that is a copy of the other one. Okay? It's like the two wedges in the quantum field theory. So the total state, you write it like this, in such a way that the trace of the additional space gives you the density matrix. So you can think that any density matrix is obtained by the partial trace of some bigger space where the state is pure. Okay, this is just that. In this context, if you take as the algebra in H2, in H1, the algebra operators in H1 and the state is this fundamental state, let's say, or this zero state, you can work out how these operators look like, and J operator is a complex conjugation followed by some transposition between these two spaces. That's why it maps operators in H1 to operators in H2. This is J. And delta is just a product of the density matrix times the inverse of the density matrix. So in this case, you can work out, you can, for example, you can take the space H1 as a tensor product of smaller spaces, okay? In the same sense that this space is contains this A2 times something in order to reproduce this type of inequalities. You can do that just by expressing your basis in terms of a product base, and this is a unitary matrix. You can work out then, having the explicit expression of J, how this looks like. The density matrix is in AI AJ bar. And this has this particular expression that involves a sum of operators and the reflected operators. I don't want to go into details, but with this, you can prove that the determinant using this reflection positivity property that you can map to this finite dimensional system, you can prove that the determinant of the powers of the density matrix is a matrix that is positive definite, and this is just the same as this one. This is n minus 1, so lambda is n minus 1, and the Wrench entropy of integer n, okay? So we have proved that this holds in any quantum system for specific coefficient lambda and a specific n. So in this case, at least, one expects that the entanglement entropies be given by operators in the quantum field theory, because it obeys all the positivity inequalities, okay? One would like to know if I can move, for example, two different parameters that are this n here. I would like to go to n equal to 1, where what is the case of entropy. And I would like to know what happens with lambda if I move lambda. In particular, if I move lambda to 0, if I move lambda to 0, I can do an expansion of these determinants, a Taylor expansion, and the inequality simplifies somehow, and they are given by these inequalities I wrote here, that you have to, with the Wrench entropies of this combination of sets, you write down some new matrix, and the determinant of the new matrix is positive. So there are no exponentials in here. There is only polynomial. You have one polynomial inequality for 2, for 3, for 4 sizes of the matrix, okay? But at the beginning, when I found this, I thought this should be just some kind of analytical continuation. You always hold, and they try to do some numerical simulations, putting random matrices, density matrices, and at the beginning I was very happy because after millions of simulations, always these were correct, but finally I found some counterexamples. So it's not general, this is general, but for other n, non-integer n and non-integer lambda, you find some possibilities that you don't, these inequalities are not obeyed, at least in finite system, okay? And it seems that the volume of a space of a density matrix that does not obey these inequalities is small, but I cannot tell what is the property to obey or not obey this type of inequalities. Where is it? It's like this, okay. Well, what happened in quantum field theory? We have very few cases that are known exactly the entanglement entropies. One, as I mentioned, is the massless free fermion. In the massless free fermion, you can check numerically this inequality, and you find that is infinitely divisible, that is the polynomial inequalities are obeyed. I didn't tell, but if the polynomial inequalities are obeyed, all the others inequalities R of A for any lambda. So lambda here is not important in this case. So somehow there is a theorem that if you have a positive definite matrix, if you produce the positive definite matrix with powers of the elements inside, this is also positive definite matrix. So if you take lambda, if you put two lambda, it's also going to be true, okay? But if you have a small lambda, then all the other lambda are going to hold the inequalities. Okay? For the case of massive fields in two dimensions, one has the exact result. All of these exact results are in 1 plus 1, okay? 1 plus 1. And this, for one interval, this is for any number of intervals, okay? And this for one interval in a massive free fermion or massive free scalar, we know the exact expression in terms of the Pain-Levé differential equations, some complicated non-linear differential equations, but are computable with a computer, and you know the answer. And you can find numerically, up to what you can check, that infinite reducibility also holds in this case. And we have some more examples worked out by Calabrese, Cardi, Pasquier, Shiraishi, Furukawa, of conformal theories in two dimensions with two intervals, just two intervals. Because in the case of one interval, we know the answer is generalized the logarithm. In two intervals, it depends on the theory. And they have produced the result for two intervals of the Renshi entropies for integer n for compactified scalars. And for the Ising model for S2, the Renshi entropy of index 2. Okay? And you find this case of that the inequalities are obeyed. These inequalities for integer n, of course, but it's not infinitely divisible in this case. One can understand that it's not surprising that this type of inequalities are obeyed because they are in the way they are computed. This entropy is by exactly by computing some correlation function of operators in conformal field theory, okay? Because, well, I would have to explain the Euclidean approach, but so in some sense, it is inherent to the fact that they compute some expectation value operators, you obtain here the inequalities of the entropy. So let me go to the conclusions that I haven't finished to write it down. The first concluding questions, the first thing is that it seems there is a connection between free field and infinitely divisibility of these matrices of the Renshi entropies. I would say that this conjecture is correct because I read some paper by Streeter, a very old one, where he says he's not talking about entropies, but he says that in a free representation of canonical commutation relations, this representation can be written as an infinite product of other representations. So I think I have to understand better that paper. I don't understand completely, but I think this is correct. And it was happening for the specific example we have here. These are free cases, and these are non-free ones. is it possible with this polynomial or even with this exponential non-linear inequalities to have a feature in more than two dimensions? We don't know. There are other applications to, for example, the quantum information theory of these inequalities. This I also don't know, and it all depends if you have an application, it all depends on how your J operator behaves, because in general it's going to be something quite complicated. In quantum field theory, you have that this J acts, this a nice property that it acts locally, in the sense that it's a transformation of points. The one question, other question is there a lambda for each theory such that E to the minus S lambda S, where S is the entropy, not the range entropy, is an operator where this obeys the inequalities. So it would be something like, I'm dreaming here, I'm dreaming. For example, for a free theory, most probably this lambda is probably zero, in the sense you can take it down to zero and it's infinity divisibility, but in general it would be something greater than zero, okay? No, it's what I said. If you have a value of lambda that is correct, then all these values, lambda twice, three lambda, all these are correct. In fact, you can show it depends on the dimensions of the matrix. From here, from some point up, it's just a continuum. You can take the continuum. Yeah, that's. But for the problem, this lambda means in the, for example, for a conformal theory, this lambda, if you change this lambda, it will change your conformal dimension of the field. So somehow it's not trivial to. It can be that it's fixed somehow. And my last question is, if this with this wedge reflection positivity, one can build another axiomatic system. Which also have Lorentzian invariance. It's not like the Euclidean one, but only you only have to take points that are space-like separated to each other. You don't need to consider operators that are time-like related to each other. I believe this can be done, but I don't know how. Okay, this is all.
Can I ask a question about your C theorem in 1 plus 1 dimensions? I think it was in the second or third board.
Was it here?
Yeah. So you're ruling out the possibility that there could be a C theorem connecting two fixed points where one of them is unitary but the other one isn't. Is that right?
No, you cannot. This theorem does not connect that data. No, it's, I'm only thinking in the whole theory, in the whole space, that is unitary. So somehow this is done in the space-time. You have, for small distances, your entropy is going to be like C ultraviolet log R. And for large distances, it behaves like C infrared log R, okay? And you move R and this quantity will connect between these two.
Okay, so I just wanted to understand the physics behind assuming that the entire flow is unitary is the fact that you want your strong sub-additivity condition to hold? Is that
right? Well, strong sub-additivity, of course, you need... it can be proved also in classical regime. This sensitivity. I don't know if you have a, for example, non-unitary thing, but you for sure you need this unitarity for playing this trick that I am assuming that the entropy of this is the same entropy as this one. This one I mean the whole set, not 2 seconds apart, but the whole set. And this
This is true because any operator here can be mapped to an operator here. So you have the same algebra of operators on the same state. Okay? So you have the same entropy. And okay.